Start it now. Are you on first, Craig?
I can be.
Well, go ahead.
Well, good morning, Chair. Good morning, Planning Commission members. Good to see some of the new slash old faces, I suppose we call it. I think I missed you last time. I apologize for that. Sometimes I get torn between these hearings and the Board of County Commissioner hearings, and that's just part of the gig, I suppose. Before I get started with the report items, I just want to update you on a few things. A week from today, we will be taking a report item to the Board of County Commissioners to identify all of the steering committee members for the Water Master Plan. Ms. Lucia Treese has agreed to be the Planning Commission representative on that steering committee. I think the committee, if I remember right, we have 11 or 12 folks on there. Very, very solid representation. The skills, the technical skills and expertise of the members on that that steering committee really are second to none in terms of the local experience, even as far as kind of state level experience. I'm very excited about the group that we have for that, and I think really it's getting the master plan planning process off on the right foot. Very accomplished group, and I think the steering committee component of that will be a very positive one. That's very critical to that process whenever you're talking about a long-range planning effort. So that's an update on that one. You do have before you today as a regular item. I won't go into much detail because I want to talk about that when it gets called up. You do have a code amendment regarding code enforcement. Just to let you all know, we are planning on taking two more code amendments to you, bringing them to you at your, I think, the first hearing in November. That is two out of, I think, a total of five different land development code amendments that staff's proposing as a result of various things. One of them is dealing with tiny houses. Another one, the one you're going to see coming up, is the tiny house one, as well as kind of a general cleanup. And then we have some other ones that pertain to water supply, some of the subdivision criteria, things that we track during the course of doing reviews. In this case, it's been, I think, over the course of 2 or 3 years. So, you know, I appreciate your patience as we kind of present those to you and walk you through some of those. Some of them can be a little bit confusing. I think a lot of them are really intended to make it easier for staff to apply the regulations. A lot of times we have inherent inconsistencies in the regulations. That's very problematic on our end because we have to kind of make a call at my level as to which regulation should apply when really we have two that conflict. So we are going to have kind of a slew of code amendments that will be coming to you and then ultimately onto the Board of County Commissioners. I think most of them are very positive. I think they're really geared toward making development, I don't want to say easier, but really coming at the regulatory side of things with maybe a better perspective. Certainly taking some of our cues from the Board of County Commissioners, not only the current board, but also past boards in terms of what they'd like to see. So you will be seeing some of those coming up. If we could go to the report items, I believe in passageways you should have each of these documents. If I could get the overhead camera, please. Maybe. There it is. So pretty much the same as what you've seen, I think, in the last few months. You know, everything is a little bit down from 2016. I would consider 2016 kind of that banner year of coming out of the recession. Things have somewhat plateaued. What you will notice, and I think we've talked about it before, the number of residential building permits for the city is substantially higher than it was last year, but 253 of those are attributable to multifamily. So anytime you see these multifamily projects coming through, and really there was a huge need in the market for multifamily housing. But really, if you take out those 253 multifamily units, the city also shows a decrease from last year. So I would say that we're seeing that across the board for all the various jurisdictions. You know, Monument had one extra that's really kind of irrelevant. But I do think that, and I've said this before, I think we're seeing a consumption of some of that inventory that was left over. That's what we saw in 2016. And in 2017 now, we're seeing new development that's being planned at the high level. I think we're going to see a lot of those single-family residential building permits that come from those plans coming in next year and the year after that. One that I can think off the top of my head is Lorson Ranch, which you've all seen before. They're in the process of master planning, if you will, the eastern half of that development, which is a substantial number. We're getting in a situation now where we're creating paper lots. It's only a matter of time before you see the residential building permits. I believe you also have our tracking sheet for the department. If we could zoom in a little bit on this. I don't pretend to think that everybody can see this, but this also goes to the point that I'm making. If you look at 2016, we ended up with 392 type C and D projects. And again, those are our rezonings, our final plats, our preliminary plans, sketch plans. You can see that as of today, year to date, we're at 281. I don't anticipate that we will see 392. I think it'll be a tick down from where we were last year. Again, I don't think that's a huge surprise because we're not, the ones that we are seeing are these big projects. I think there's a lot more flexibility in terms of the lending to plat bigger projects than there was in the last 3 or 4 years. And I think the development community feels a little bit more secure in platting something of that size than they have in the past. So where we might have seen 6 or 7 final plats, we're seeing 1 or 2, but they're all with more lots, basically. The quantity of lots with each development application, I think, is going up. Our early assistance applications continue to roll in, but a lot of that's for smaller stuff, commercial development, stuff like that. So I don't think there's a huge influx there. I think it's just we may have less numbers but larger scale. We'll see how that all plays out in the next couple of years, but I think we're turning in a good direction there. With regard to early assistance meetings, I've done some presentations in the past on our EDARP program, which is the electronic submittal program. I'm going to see a demo today. Hopefully we're going to be able to turn on the early assistance application part of it. It's very impressive, if I don't say so myself. We have the consultants have the ability to identify dates and times where they'd like to have that meeting, and then our staff can pick from that so that there's not the phone call and the return phone call and the return phone call. It's really making things a lot more efficient, not only for us, but obviously also for the development community. So hoping to have that turned on. And what that means is once we get that particular component done, all the other minor development applications that we deal with, which are things like driveway permits and residential site development plans and decks and things like that, will all follow suit because that kind of creates that format for all those other ones. So it is truly only a matter of, I would say, months before everything that we take in from an application standpoint is coming in electronically rather than in paper. You're going to see some changes out front, I believe, at our counter. I'm going to try to create a couple different work kiosks for folks that come in, maybe aren't aware of the electronic process or are unable to for whatever reason, where they can actually upload their hand-drawn map and create that electronic file themselves with the help of staff. Again, trying to make sure that everything that comes in is coming in electronically, so we're not having to deal with all the paper. Those are things you can kind of expect to see from us in the near future. Very exciting time for me, particularly. I think it's great to see us moving in that direction, and that's the direction the county is going in general. If you look at the efforts by the county assessor, if you haven't been on his new website, I encourage you to do that. We're going to be a part of that. We haven't gotten to that point yet, but our two websites are EDARP and his new program are going to be basically talking, and you can bounce back and forth with ease. I think it's a good time to be working at the county because there's a lot more efficiency that's going to be created really in all the departments, but particularly with our department. With regard to your items today, you have one consent item. Not counting the minutes, of course, minutes being item 2A. You also have item 2B, which is Windmill Mesa approval location. There were three conditions and one notation on that. Again, that is an approval location is for a public place or building or facility. If you recall, the county adopted our 1041 regulations. When we adopted those, it didn't take everything out of the approval locations. It only took out those chapters that were written in the 1041 regulations. Something like what's in front of you today with a park was not addressed in the 1041 regulations, so it's still being handled as an approval location. And just as a reminder, approval locations stop here at the Planning Commission. You have final authority with regard to the county. These are not items that go on to the Board of County Commissioners. We sent out adjoining property owner notices. In response to that, we received four in favor, one with no opinion, and one against. The one against basically just addressed the additional access, was opposed to that. Staff can't answer any questions that you have on that if you'd like. And I think with that, I will vacate the podium, but certainly happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Anyone have any questions for Mr. Dossie? Thank you very much.
Thank you all for spending some time with us today.
The voting members today will be Ms. Rainey, Mr. Creeley, Mr. Curry, Mr. Risley. We have two associate members. Joan Therese will be a voting member, and Jane Dillon is back, and she hasn't had her orientation, but...
No, I don't have to have an orientation.
But we're going to count your 7 years as to be a voting member, and I'll be a voting member. So with that, has everyone had a chance to review the minutes? Any changes? Hearing none, the minutes will be deemed approved as presented. And then we have a item on the consent calendar, which is the approval of location. Does any of the commissioners want to hear that as a regular item? Does anyone in the audience want to hear it as a regular item? I do have a couple questions on it, if we could have the applicant come forward. If you could state your name and sign in,
okay.
I'd appreciate that.
My name is Ben Valdez. I'm the director of Whitefield Parks and Recreation with School District 3.
Welcome. The questions I had is, right now this park is pretty much just a grassy area, is that correct?
No, it does have a pavilion, and we do have a porta potty there and a parking lot.
All right.
With about 28 spots.
The reason I'm asking that is, in the 39 years I've lived in this area, we've lived near parks, and they're very nice. But at night, sometimes there's problems with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, are you going to have hours? What's the lighting going to be like?
Our policy is
The parking lots so that people can't come in and do wheelies in them during the night and all those kinds of things?
We have fencing around it, but our policy and our rules are state sunrise to sunset. So we try and have our parks closed. We do have, we work with El Paso County, and the district has its own police department. So we do try and travel throughout the district on a regular basis. And we recently hired even weekend crews for surveillance. We do have situations that come up through some of our parks at times.
Okay. And do you expect this one will be a problem one, or?
No. I mean, that's not one of our problem areas.
Okay.
So I sure hope not. Knock on wood. Yeah.
Well, that was the questions that I had.
Does anybody
else have questions? Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Since this is a consent item, I will hear a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Risley.
How about Rainey? With regard to item 2B, U17-002, approval of location Windmill Mesa, I move for approval with according to new standard resolution page 9 with 3 conditions and 1 notation.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second from Ms. Therese. So we have a motion on the floor. Is there any comments? Not. We will take a vote. This is on item 2B, U17-002, approval location for Windmill Mesa with 3 conditions, 1 notation, approval page number 9. Ms. Rainey?
Aye.
Mr. Creeley?
Aye.
Mr. Curry?
Aye.
Mr. Risley?
Aye.
Ms. Therese?
Aye.
Ms. Dillon?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye, and the motion is approved unanimously. Thank you. We'll move into our second item, which is, I think, our last item.
Again, Craig Dossey, Planning Community Development. I just want to say a few words before I turn it over to Mindy Madden. Mindy is our code enforcement supervisor. What's in front of you today is really a product of an identification by staff, and when I say staff, I mean both our staff as well as the county attorney's office, in trying to figure out ways to make us more efficient, as well as being more responsive to the public. This one is really kind of near and dear to my heart because it bothers me how long it takes us to get items through our process and through the court to get approval to provide abatement to some of the code enforcement properties that we deal with. I think it frustrates the neighbors. It certainly frustrates me. I always try to put myself in the shoes of the neighbors, and some of the things that we have to see and that we have to enforce on are really irreprehensible, in my opinion. I think our staff does a great job, but again, there's only so much we can do in getting it to the Board of County Commissioners to authorize litigation. After that, it's kind of in the court's hands. And so I feel like whatever we can do on our end to shorten that timeline, to get properties in front of a judge, to get abatement approved, I think it's incumbent upon us to try to do that. You know, code enforcement doesn't know any bounds within the county's jurisdiction. You know, we deal with code enforcement issues in areas where it's kind of a city enclave, it's surrounded by the city. One of the most recent ones you probably saw on the news were some of the construction trailers over off Austin Bluffs, kind of south of Stetson Hills area. Really a horrible situation. The owner changed names multiple times. We had a hard time serving them. It took years to get that done, and the neighbors were way more patient than I would have been. We deal with weeds that are 8 feet tall. We deal with junk and hoarding and all that stuff. So my opinion is anything we can do on our end to make it faster, to be more responsive to those adjoining property owners, we need to do it. A few things you should know about the item today. This is the result also of an executive session that we had with the Board of County Commissioners. And I know Mindy will go into that more detail. They supported the idea of trying to give my position the authority to authorize litigation, primarily because it does make us more responsive to the public. They did ask for some additional considerations in terms of additional time for the respective property owner to respond. I think you're going to see that, and maybe you'll go through what that looks like. But it does make us more efficient. We're not committing as much staff time to writing reports that go to the Board of County Commissioners. We're not committing additional staff time to actually attend those county Board of County Commissioner meetings. I think this really gives us more opportunity to better serve the public. Behind me, we have three code enforcement officers. This is our code enforcement team. We have three code enforcement officers to serve the entire county. I don't think I need to say it, but I'm going to say it anyway. That's not enough. When you deal with the caseload that we deal with, and maybe Mindy can go through what that looks like, it is a huge workload. It would be a huge workload for a team of five, maybe even seven, but to do it with three people really is amazing. I don't know how they do it, and I give all the credit to them. But this makes it so they don't have to spend as much time at the hearings. They can be out doing what they do best, and that's being responsive to the general public. I also want to point out that in 2017, this year, it was the first year, to my knowledge, in my 10 years with the county, that we've had a budget, we've had a line item in our budget of $25,000 to provide cleanup services. In the past, we've had to wait and get funds from environmental services or put a lien against the property. In this case, when we go through the process and we go through litigation and we get that entry warrant, we can actually go in, clean it up, and then back bill the property owner. That makes us substantially more responsive to the general public. And again, when you're that neighbor next door and you've been dealing with this property for sometimes 2 or 3 years, to now knock that down and it's a matter of months, and you see the county out there cleaning up that property, I think that's a good thing. I think it makes us look certainly a lot more responsive. Not only look responsive, but we are responsive. I'm hoping that in the future, maybe that line item grows. The code enforcement files are not going to go down. The population's only increasing in the county. We will inevitably need more code enforcement officers. But this, what's in front of you today, is the first step toward making us more efficient and more responsive, maybe the second step after the line item. But having that money in our budget, I can't tell you the relief that I hear from the adjoining property owners. When they see us out there and we're able to clean something up in a matter of months that maybe before took 2, 3, 10 years in some cases, because we're having a hard time serving people, that makes the county certainly look a lot more responsive. And that I think that's what we're here for. We're here to serve the public. So with that, I'm going to turn over to Mindy, but I did want to let you know why this is a big deal. It's not just changing process. It's really changing how we interact with the public. So with that, I'm going to turn over to Mindy.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Could I ask a question of Craig? You might be able to answer this. In reading the staff report, obviously there's a little bit of information about the background of the current situation. But I'm just curious, is this a typical, the process that we have in place now, is this a typical process for other counties, or how did the existing process come to be, I guess?
I don't think there's really a typical process, and Mindy can go through it more. She's worked in other jurisdictions and has researched others. I will tell you that with a county the size of El Paso County, and having those discussions with Mindy, the idea of taking every single one to the board is very rare. They have most other counties and municipalities that have a population the size of ours. There is a more administrative process in place because it's just a huge time commitment. The amount of time that takes staff to write all those reports and attend all those hearings, it just consumes what they do. And again, only having three code enforcement officers, taking them away from the field is not a good idea. We just don't have the resources to really tolerate that moving into the future. So I think it's pretty atypical. When we had that conversation with the board at the executive session, their feeling was as long as there's an appeal process and Mindy would go through that, then they were comfortable with going through this.
The reason I'm curious about the genesis of the existing system is that, in El Paso County, owner rights, property owner rights, mm-hmm. are very important, and I'm not suggesting that code violations are in line with those ownership rights, but just curious if there was something in terms of due process or some reason why this was such an onerous right. process for the county.
Yeah, and a lot of people like to compare us to the city. You're talking about a statutory county versus a home rule city. That those are apples and oranges when it comes to requirements, legal requirements. The issue of property rights came up during our executive session, and I will tell you there was a fairly substantial debate as to, well, whose property rights are we really trying to protect here? Because you may have that individual property owner who's got weeds that are 8 foot tall, but you also have at least four people usually surrounding them whose property values are suffering because that property is the way it is. So there's always that debate. You all hear that with every application that comes through usually, particularly the ones that are regular items. So that was a discussion with the Board of County Commissioners. And, you know, at some point, you have to stop worrying about that individual property owner because they're creating a burden to their neighborhood. And they're not being responsive to all the various notices that we send. And eventually we have to do something about it. And what this does is it makes it so we can do that something a lot faster.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Dossie before he brings up the real star?
Well, that's the expert. I don't know anything about it, so thank you.
Good morning. Mindy Madden, co-enforcement supervisor. Craig gave a great overview, and I'm not sure I need this presentation now. He is. Smells acting weird. Is there a trick to this? My mouse keeps jumping. So with the overview Craig provided, this brings us into LDC 1710, Amendments to Enforcement Procedures. So to kind of give you a brief understanding of our process, the question you had about how we compare to other jurisdictions, a lot of other jurisdictions have a criminal process, so they issue citations for code violations. We do not issue tickets, we do not assess fines, we follow a civil process, so any penalties or judgments are issued by the judge when we go to civil court. So that's how we work and how we compare to other jurisdictions. I will hand it over to Mr. Hodges for our review criteria.
I'll be very brief as far as review criteria is concerned. I know that there was one question or mention of due process already. I can tell you that our existing show cause system before the Board of County Commissioners is not statutorily driven. My office has reviewed the proposed amendments, and these do meet the requirements of due process on a couple different levels, specifically the people being accused of violation have notice and more than one reasonable opportunity. Otherwise, it's really a practical consideration as to whether or not the Planning Commission recommends that these amendments be put into place. Can I answer any questions as far as the framework? It's fairly loose as far as a recommendation for an amendment. Thank you.
So this chart shows our current procedure and the amount of time it takes for each step. So we start with our notice of violation, which gives the property owner or the occupant or tenant 10 days to correct a violation or to contact code enforcement to request additional time to correct a violation. If nothing is done, so this is from the standpoint if a property owner just does nothing, doesn't contact us, the next step would be to review the file with the county attorney's office. We meet with the county attorney's office once a month. So we get a violation, nothing's done, we have to wait till the next meeting with the county attorney, which, depending on when the violation was received, could be 20 to 30 days. After we meet with the county attorney, the item is then scheduled for a Board of County Commissioners meeting, and we meet with the Board of County Commissioners on the second Tuesday of every month. So we meet with the county attorney's office in the middle of the month. Then we're waiting another 20 to 25 days before we take it to the commissioners. And what we're asking from the Board of County Commissioners is for them to approve staff's request to authorize the county attorney's office to pursue litigation. At the board hearing, a couple things happen. If no one shows up to the board hearing, a property owner does not show, the board typically will approve staff's request. If the property owner does show up, We will hold typically a full hearing in which the board will hear staff's side of things, and then they'll hear the property owner's side of things, and the board can decide to either still approve staff's request, or they can deny staff's request, or sometimes they will even continue the item to a following hearing. That puts us another 30 days out in order to get that authorization for the county attorney's office to pursue litigation. Some things to consider. Code enforcement staff spends 45 minutes to an hour preparing each item for a board hearing. 2 months ago, we had about 19 items go before the Board of County Commissioners. That was an hour per item. That was just a very long time to prepare each item to go to the board. And then the county attorney's office staff will spend another 15 to 20 minutes per item reviewing and putting that into workflow. And for each board hearing that we have an item on the agenda for, code enforcement staff and the county attorney staff is present at those hearings. So that's another 30 to 45 minutes we spend at the staff hearings. And this again just shows that we are limited to the second Tuesday of each month to go before the Board of County Commissioners requesting the authorization. The big drive behind this is we have very, very low citizen participation in these show cause hearings. So from 2015 to now, we've only had 20 people show up to these hearings out of 153 items we have taken to the Board of County Commissioners. That's very low. And we do notify the property owners and a renter, if we're aware of one, of the hearing 5 days prior. So they are made aware, and we saw very low participation rates. One of the things to take into account is code enforcement staff works very, very closely with these property owners if they're responsive. We give them time and time and time to correct a violation before we get to a Board of County Commissioners hearing. It's just not, you know what, you're not correcting the violation, you made some progress, but we're going to go forward. That's not the case. This is for people that have done nothing, have not contacted code enforcement staff, and the attendance rates are just very, very low. So what we are proposing is we still start with the notice of violation, but we want to increase that from 10 days to 14 days. Give them additional time for them to receive the mail, to contact us, or to correct the violation. And instead of reviewing the items with the county attorney's office once a month, we want to give that authorization to the Planning Community Development Director to issue an executive determination authorizing the county attorney's office to pursue litigation. And in that executive determination, we will give the property owner 10 days to appeal that executive determination. If they do not appeal that executive determination, the county attorney's office can proceed with legal action. If we receive a request for an appeal in writing within 10 days of that executive determination, we will schedule the item for a Board of County Commissioners hearing for an appeal hearing. So this is not a show cause hearing, but an appeal hearing where the property owner can bring whatever evidence or testimony they have, and then we can present our evidence and testimony, and then the board will decide whether or not to overturn or affirm that decision to issue the executive determination. So this is kind of a putting this appeal processes in there is to catch those people that would have attended the show cause hearing. So they still had the opportunity to go before the Board of County Commissioners to appeal the executive determination to authorize the county attorney's office. So if the board affirms the decision to issue the executive determination, they'll instruct us to proceed. And if they decide to overturn it, then no further action is taken. So this is just kind of show you how our current process and the proposed process will flow. So with the current process, the notice violation, 10 days. The meeting with the county attorney's office to review the items, 20 to 30 days. And then 20 to 25 days before we can schedule a show cause hearing before the board. The proposed procedure, 14 days on the notice of violation. The 10 days on the executive determination for them to appeal. And then it can go straight to the county attorney's office if we do not receive an appeal. If we do receive an appeal, then it's scheduled for the second Tuesday of the following month for the board hearing. So that's still very more efficient than our current process. So the proposed amendments will increase the time allowance on the notice of violation from 10 to 14 days. It'll remove the requirement for a Board of County Commissioners show cause hearing and allow for the PCD director through an executive determination to authorize the county's attorney's office to pursue legal action. And we also have procedures for appeals to be made of that executive determination before the board. Any questions? It's kind of a lot.
Yes, Mr. Risley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a couple of questions. So just again, maybe more for my education than anything else. Once the attorney's office is authorized to pursue litigation, what does that typically look like? Is that typically a letter sent from the attorney's office to the property owner that we intend to sue for these violations, or that we're going to, as Mr. Dossie said, we're going to initiate cleanup and you're going to be financially responsible for it? Or can you kind of give us some examples of what happens once the attorney's office is authorized?
Well, I'm not an attorney, so I'm going to give it to you in regular people terms, and then
that way we'll understand it.
Mr. Hodges can interrupt if he needs to. So the county attorney's office will not send a letter saying we're going to sue you in court. What happens is they go directly to filing a complaint with the court. That's right terminology. The property owner will be served. They have X amount of days to answer the court, I believe 20 days. And then it just goes through the normal routes. What we're finding is a lot of people do not answer the court. And I guess the ruling is in our favor. Is that right?
Ms. Madden, if I could just interrupt really quickly.
Please do.
I might be equipped to answer the question as to how litigation works. Upon being authorized to initiate litigation, the county attorney's office would serve a summons and complaint on whoever the defendant is, whoever the violator is. They have 21 days to answer that. If they don't answer, what we can seek is called a default judgment. My understanding is that is the majority of cases, is they just don't respond to anything. Once a judgment is in place, whether by default or if the matter were to go forward with the more traditional litigation process and ultimately a trial, once a judgment is in place saying, hey, this is in violation, whether it's refuse or weeds or whichever other code violation we're talking about, then when the person's in violation, there would be a contempt hearing to actually enforce it and have a judge essentially force that person to, either clean up their property or be looking at potential incarceration or a daily fine. I think the daily fine is a little bit more standard. So that's just a general view of the kind of an overview of how litigation works. There's a lot more detail than that. The reason I provide a bit of detail, though, is that the litigation process itself does take quite a bit of time. Oftentimes, the state court judges will allow people quite a bit of time to respond, particularly when they're representing themselves. If they do become involved in litigation, it can kind of bog down, and it can take months, if not years.
So the reason I was curious about that is that it sounds like once litigation is authorized, there are still lots of off-ramps where the owner could correct the issue or could become responsive or could do some things to try to mitigate the issue.
That's correct.
And so I guess the reason I think that's important is that even though we're, I don't know if short-circuiting is the right term, but even though we're sort of decreasing the amount of time to get to litigation, there are still lots of opportunities once we're there for the issue to be corrected without kind of going to the full-blown trial.
Another part of that is important is we continue to work with the property owners even after the county attorney's office is authorized to pursue legal action. So code enforcement will still meet with property owners, let them know what needs to be done. We do site inspections, you know, to encourage their progress, to let them know this is what needs to be done. And if they comply, if they fix everything, then we request that the county attorney's office dismiss any charges. So our involvement doesn't stop once it goes to the county attorney's office. We continue to try to get compliance because having the judge issue any fines doesn't correct a violation. Some people, it's a little more encouraging factor. They don't want to be fined, but that doesn't solve our problem. So we continue to work with them, and sometimes the looming threat of a fine from a judge does kick, you know, get people going. But we never stop working with people, even once it's in the hands of the county attorney's office.
So the other thing I'm curious about, oftentimes if it's a zoning issue or some other land use issue, one of the solutions aside from litigation is to come before this body to make an adjustment to zoning or make some other change that would allow whatever the situation is to then be legal. And I know there have been some commissioners in the past who have bemoaned the fact that we become a way of allowing property owners to beg for forgiveness as opposed to asking for permission in the first place. So at what point in the process would those kinds of cases come to us? Does that typically happen before it gets to the level of litigation, or is that subsequent to? I'm just curious where in the flow.
So we would start with our same process, notice of violation, for their land use violation. And most of the time, they would make application through the planning department to go through the approval process. Once they make application and they're actively working on getting that approval, especially for the variance, we do not take any further enforcement action. We just stand by. If they stop going through the process or they discontinue the process, you know, by all means, then we address it, we close it out, or we move forward. We've had very few land development violations go to litigation, because generally they'll make application and go through the process.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr.
Thank you. I gotta say, I try to take this from the perspective of a person who could potentially someday get a code violation. I hope I don't, but I'm just, and I say, okay, do I feel like this is unfair? I don't. I like it. I think you've given those people who do care an opportunity to file if they want to. The only part that gives me a little bit of pause is, you just mentioned that you stop enforcement actions if they file an appeal, but I don't see that anywhere in the amendments. And I don't see it in the language here. So if somebody were to file an appeal and want the show cause hearing, nothing in here says that that the county attorney's office stops action or waits until the hearing to do that. And so they're during the 10-day period, and then if they file an appeal during the time while we wait on the board meeting, I don't see anything in the amendments that says you actually stop the enforcement pending the outcome of that process or appeal. That covered elsewhere in the code, or should there be something in here so that it isn't just left up to individual judgment?
Well, the executive determination that will be issued will say authorization will be provided to the county attorney's office after that 10-day time period. If we receive a proper appeal, which is within those 10 days, then that's the language in there says that then it'll be placed on the Board of County Commissioners agenda for an appeal hearing, not a show cause hearing. So
you're right, but what it doesn't say is that the county attorney's office will hold the action pending
right.
the outcome.
So
in
no
theory, the county attorney's office, once they receive that authorization, even with an appeal request, at least in theory.
Well, they will not receive the authorization until after that 10-day period. If we do not receive an appeal, then they're authorized. So they don't receive authorization as soon as that executive determination is issued.
Mr. Curry, I think maybe the way I'm understanding your question, you're kind of looking at it as like two different paths maybe, and it's really not. The appeal hearing is part of the enforcement process. So it's not that we suspend enforcement to have the appeal hearing. It's just another step toward taking it to the courts for litigation. So we're not truly suspending enforcement. We're just taking it to that next step. If we go to appeal hearing, the Board of County Commissioners always has the authority to continue things, to give people more time. So it's not like they're running parallel paths. It's all one path getting to that appeal hearing if we get that written request.
Again, here's the issue. Let's just follow the process through here. You have a code violation, and give the alleged violator 14 days to correct the situation. After the 14 days, you determine that you're going to authorize the attorney's office. Once you issue that authorization, then it gives 10 days for them to file the appeal.
Right.
That automatically mean that the county attorney's office will not take any action in that 10-day period?
Yes.
It wasn't explicit in the code, and I was just trying to make sure that it was either covered or it was quite clear now on the record that, in fact, it does include.
Yeah, it's one timeline. So once that 10-day appeal period is up, that would then trigger the county attorney's office to pursue litigation, because they basically have to sit back and wait. Now, they could be doing work to prepare it to file with court, and that would be, frankly, to be expected, because I would expect them to take action once that 10 days is up rather than waiting to the 10 days and then doing the work. But it doesn't – they're not going to do anything with the court until that appeal period's up, because it has to go through that opportunity to be taken to the board first, then they can take it to court.
Agree with all that. That's the right process. That's the way it should be, in my opinion. I just wanted to make sure that the language was legally sufficient, such that it was quite clear in the actual code of the amendment text that was the case.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted to do. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I think you've done a really, really good job, so that now staff is only preparing for meetings for those people that actually want to have one. I think that's great. There's a lot of opportunities here. I'm good.
And
sufficiency of the language. That's
what I don't want to lose in this is we work very closely with the county attorney's office. And I think Mindy outlined that we meet with them routinely in preparation for the show cause hearings with the board. My anticipation is we will actually be in communication with them more frequently, because now there is no kind of timeline for getting something to a hearing. It's ongoing. It's not once a month. It's, okay, this one's coming up, and now we need to communicate with you and let you know the 10-day period's up. You can't really write that into the regulations, because it's going to be on a case-by-case basis. But I anticipate that our communication with the county attorney's office is actually going to get heightened rather than be reduced, because each property is going to be on its own individual timeline.
Please understand, you don't need to convince me of the need for this. I like it.
Yeah.
Just trying to make sure that the language completely captures what it is you intend, because your attorney will tell you that if it isn't in writing, it doesn't count.
Well,
so that's all I'm trying to do.
Right. And we get to stand up here and take credit for drafting this, but really Mindy drafted this in coordination with the county attorney's office.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all I have.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Ms. Dill.
Now, I'm looking at this more from the neighbors who are around. And if through your code enforcement and through the county attorney's office, if they ignore a fine, ignore everything you're doing, what relief is there for those neighbors?
We can, or the county attorney's office can request an entry warrant to abate the violation.
Okay. So the county itself can take mm-hmm. over and get rid of
and
what's
like
happening.
Craig mentioned before, this is the first year we've had a
had
budget for that.
I heard that. Uh-huh.
We've done about 3 cleanups this year, and these are big cleanup properties. We don't just go clean up the smallest thing, but these properties that we've cleaned up, it's about $5,000 a piece to clean these properties up. because we do consider the neighbors and what they've been through, and so we do have that form of relief.
Okay, thank you.
I see another question. Yes, Mr. Peely.
I have some experience having done this a little bit in Texas, different environment in Texas. So I was on the planning board, and I went out a full day to work with the code enforcement officers, and maybe we did visited five places, and three of those we had to have people that were armed. We had to have a policeman with us. So I'm concerned about whether those kinds of things take place here, and if so, I'm worried about you and the other code enforcement. I like this idea very much. I'm just curious about how these things happen when things get nasty.
We do work closely with the Sheriff's Department, and they will provide deputies if there is a safety concern, and they're almost always present. If we do an abatement, they'll have a deputy or two there on the site with us as we do the cleanup. Day-to-day activities, we do not go knock on every door. One, it's just not realistic for us to do with only three people, but we will set up, you know, on-site inspections, meetings with the property owner, and for the most part, people are cooperative. Sometimes they just don't
slow
do it, but for the most part, they're open to what we have to say and what needs to be done. So we've been very fortunate so far that we've not had one of those situations.
I do have another question for the county attorney's office. Is there an issue in timing from your office to get to a judge to make some sort of judgment? Is there a long delay in that process?
There can be, sir. It depends. I know attorneys always give answers that begin with "it depends," but if litigation's initiated and you have that situation of the violator just simply doesn't respond, a default judgment enters, things move pretty quickly as far as getting a court's approval for this, in fact, being a violation. And then we can proceed, depending on how nasty things get, with administrative warrants, fines, incarceration, those kinds of things. Alternatively, if somebody does respond to the lawsuit, there's the potential for several different hearings, including a contempt hearing on the person to actually conduct the enforcement. So this is a kind of a long way of explaining, yeah, it can take several months to actually accomplish anything, months if not years.
So we're, you know, in some cases we're tweaking around the edges of days and weeks on this particular thing and still getting blocked up, getting from, you know, to the end of the legal process where a judge has to hear the case and etc. It could be.
Correct. Yeah, we do what we can to move them along as quickly as we possibly can, but there's only so much control we have over that litigation process and how long that it takes.
Again, I really like this. I think it's a great idea. And as long as Mr. Dorsey, who's sitting there with a, you know, with a law degree, it makes perfect sense when he runs for president someday and some idiot like me takes over.
I assume I have your vote.
I do.
I'm going to make El Paso County great again.
Yes. And an idiot like me takes over that doesn't have a law degree. You know what I'm saying? With an attorney there, his involvement early in this process seems to make a lot of sense because he knows the rules, but the next fellow may, or, you know, that's the only, just something in the back of my brain that says, you know, there's future things. Having said all that, I'm going to vote for this. I think it's a great idea.
Well, and one other thing I wanted to point out, we didn't provide a lot of background on kind of how things get initiated from a complaint process. We don't go out looking for problems. We don't have the staff to do that, except on commercial properties. That's the one exception. Sometimes if we're in a neighborhood and we're going to issue a violation, we kind of look at the houses around it, because we do get kind of the backlash from the person who does get enforced. Then they're going up and down every street in their neighborhood calling us about, you know, every little thing. So sometimes we will look at the greater neighborhood. But in large part, these are complaint-driven. And I say that because I'm going to ask Mindy right now to talk about how many complaints we get every year, because this goes towards my point earlier of why it's important to create more efficiency. It is a staggering number when you think that when you realize we only have three code enforcement officers. So how many complaints did we get last year?
Well, I can give you the stats so far of this year, and we're only in October. So just for ordinance violations, which is your rubbish, your weeds, your unsafe buildings, we're already in the 700 case number files. And that's a lot just on ordinance violations. For land development violations, we're probably nearing the 300 mark. And these are violations of the LDC. So a lot of times we'll see the inoperable vehicles, business operating in zone districts they shouldn't be. So for three people, and this year we just got our third person about a month ago, I mean, we're bogged down, to be honest. So that's roughly 900 to 1,000 cases just this year.
So when you see her numbers that she put up earlier about how many actually go to the board to authorize litigation, that is a fraction of the overall number that we deal with. Those are the ones that really haven't responded, or in some cases have responded and said, I'm not doing anything. That's a small number. So we're still, and I think one of the concerns was making sure we still work with people. The reason why the 1,000 aren't coming to the board is because we're working with people. A lot of them like to drag their feet. Even when they engage in the land use process, the ones that you all see sometimes they even drag their feet on that. And so what we do is we put them on a timeline, and we say, you have to make application by now. You have to make your resubmittal by this date, to make sure that they are actually engaging with us in a good faith effort to try to rectify the situation, rather than just coming in and saying, oh, I promise I'm going to submit my application, but I might not get to it for 3 years. That doesn't work for us. But the numbers that Mindy identified, those are the real numbers, and that's why it's very important to create more efficiency on our end. I think Mindy alluded to it. What you're not seeing today, but what the Board of County Commissioners will see, is changes to those ordinances. You all don't have authority over those ordinances. Those are adopted and approved by the Board of County Commissioners with regard to weeds and rubbish. There are other kind of cascading changes as a result of what we're doing today that will need to be made to those ordinances. We've already got those drafted. So when this all goes to the Board of County Commissioners, we're also going to be taking those ordinances, which require two readings, to the board to make the similar corresponding changes to those ordinances. So it's a bigger effort with the county attorney's office and our office, but I wanted her to go through those numbers because it's an impressive number. I think last year we had 800 weed complaints. 800 weed complaints. When you divide that by two, that's what we had last year in terms of code enforcement staff. That's 400 weed complaints per officer. I mean, you look at, not only like we have a map of El Paso County in here, but just the drive time associated with getting to all those properties and keeping up to date on those is substantial. So any efficiency we can create, and I appreciate Mr. Hodges chiming in on how long it can take to get through the court process, that really for me is the frustrating part. And so I feel like at least with this, we can kind of take care of our business in a much more efficient manner. We can't do anything with what the judges do. But at least there's no excuses on our end in terms of getting it to the judge. So I want you to get an understanding, maybe appreciation for the numbers that we're dealing with and why this is so important.
I don't want to get ahead of your presentation, but I have one question. With Craig's $25,000 budget item, if you have to go out and clean something up, how do you get paid so that you can keep that money in the budget?
Probably at least give a general framework for that. In the event that an administrative warrant is issued and we incur costs to clean something up, then what we would do is seek to collect against the property owner by way of obtaining judgments and liens upon that property.
And so those judgments then are recorded as a lien against that property, or do you have a stronger arm than that?
I believe, and Craig may be able to correct me if there's a more streamlined route, but I believe that what would need to happen as part of that litigation that issued the administrative warrant in the first place, that we would need to seek the costs of that cleanup in the form of a judicially approved judgment, and then actually file that as a, record that as a lien against that piece of property.
And we do have, I just to piggyback off with Mr. Hodges said, we do have the ability to just send a bill to the property owner, because honestly, we deal with people of all makes and models. I mean, there are people who are just so overwhelmed that they don't feel like they have the mental capacity to clean up their property, but maybe they have the financial capacity to pay us back. So we will actually run the cleanup, and then they'll just pay us. Now that is very rare, because most of them, if we push them hard enough, will just go ahead and do it themselves. But in large part, what would happen is there would be a lien against the property, and before that property could be sold, that lien would have to be paid off. That's not preferred because, you know, we're spending county funds, but we are getting paid back. And I just want to put it on the record that those funds are out of the general fund. Those are coming from the general fund into our budget, and when they're paid back, they're paid back into the general fund. So it's not some special code enforcement fund. Those are all funneled through the general fund.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm done with my presentation, so unless you have any other questions.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Kenny Hodges, Senior Assistant County Attorney. I just had one issue I wanted to chime in on Mr. Curry's question. At the bottom of page 5 of your packet, there's a statement. It's fairly subtle, but if no appeal is received within 10 days after the date of the PCD Director's executive determination, then the PCD Director's executive determination shall be final and the OCA may proceed with litigation to seek remedies. I believe that probably covers what you were concerned about.
I'm good with that. Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Any other questions? Then we'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Greeley.
Concerning agenda item number 3, LDC 17-010, the code amendments, I move for approval in accordance with page 7 of the new standard resolution.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, Mr. Curry is second. Any discussion? Yes, Mr. Curry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make one comment. I shared Mr. Creeley's concern. I appreciated him bringing that up about the law degree issue. I had the same issue. And had this said that the executive director would direct the OCA to do something, I would have had a problem with it. It just authorizes them. I was worried about what would happen if the executive director authorized action and there was insufficient legal foundation to do that. That one word, authorization, was what tipped it for me. It just authorizes them. If it's not there, they don't have to do anything. So I had the exact same thing, and I just want to say I appreciated that comment. And for me, that one word was what did it. So I'm good. I'll be supporting the motion.
Okay. Any other comments, discussion before we vote on the motion? All right. Hearing none, then Ms. Rainey?
Aye.
Mr. Creeley?
Aye.
Mr. Curry?
Aye.
Mr. Risley?
Aye.
Ms. Therese?
Aye.
Ms. Dillon?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye, and the motion is approved unanimously. And unless there's some other business before the commission,
next meeting.
Just as an update, we should have a hearing, the first hearing again in November. We have the two code amendments that I mentioned earlier. So we'll look forward to seeing you all then.
All right. Thank you. We are adjourned, and it's just 5 minutes after 10. Hopefully.